Today's guest is not just one of the top strength and conditioning coaches here in the UAE. He's actually a person I've known for almost more than a decade. Back when we were 18, we actually competed against each other in basketball in the Under-18 Asian Championship. And fast forward now, each one of us has carved his own path in the strength and conditioning world. Tarek works with athletes and non-athletes. He follows an athletic and performance-based approach, which is basically similar to what I do. We always have deep discussions, and honestly, it's a pleasure to have him today here. So Tarek, before diving into our deep conversations, while doing the introduction, actually I had a couple of flashbacks. So yeah. I started talking about how we competed against each other, how we played. We had some pretty rough days back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, man.
But these were some nice memories. And actually, the both of us took, I think, a similar career path.
Yeah.
So we're going to dive deep into that. Do you have any nice memories of the old days? What was it before, like back then? What was the career goal?
Obviously, it was much different, yani, than what, I mean, happened nowadays. But for me, I thought, and for sure, I was going to be a basketball player. Yeah. And I think if the war didn't happen and like certain circumstances like in Syria, I would have definitely still be playing by now. But yeah, I mean, I always say those were probably like the best days of our lives. I mean, we were spending maybe 4 months in camp outside our city, just preparing for championships, traveling every now and then. 8 to 10 hours a day, you're spending it in the club between friends and so on. Not much studying, not much, just playing basketball every single day. So, man, really, like every time I kind of like reminisce and look back at it, I think, yeah, definitely those were the best days of my life, for sure.
I think you and me both, like, yes, we are now deep into strength and conditioning, but yeah, we always have that passion, that passion for basketball.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I still buy basketball shoes, even though I don't wear any of them. Like I have around 20, like just piled up in boxes in the house. So there's still like that part of you thinks that, oh, I still act like as if I'm playing basketball, and you're not really doing that anymore. But it stays there, to be honest.
What do you think was the main turning point for you to dive deep into strength and conditioning?
I wouldn't say there was like a particular moment. Also, in terms of like a career, I wasn't really going into sports.
What was it?
I majored in engineering, so I was supposed to be an engineer. Yani. I think for several like reasons, I won't dive into so much details, but during the time, because of the war and the sanctions and so on, I wasn't really able to land certain jobs that I wanted to get.
Okay.
And just there was a lot of things that were out of my control to kind of get in the path that I wanted to get. And it was between staying in jobs that I didn't really feel that I had the passion or the energy to get out of bed on a daily basis to go to. And I didn't really feel that those kind of jobs are going to challenge you on a daily basis, or just particular reasons like that. So it was between me moving to Canada or somewhere in Europe, or like just finding something temporary to just land on my feet and then decide what I want to do. So I started PTing on the side.
I guess most of us did started that, like, yes, I want to do a couple of PT sessions here and there until I figured it out. It's crazy, yeah.
Yeah, to be honest, but the first year I remember was the hardest, I would believe, because it was such a gray area. Like, one day you're feeling good, another day you're feeling, like, horrible, and obviously, everyone around you is still in corporate, so you're thinking, okay, like, am I doing the right thing?
Where was that?
When or where?
Where?
No, here. I was, because I studied here. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I majored in engineering here. I worked for like 2 years. Then I kind of like made the transition. But like I said, during the first year, you're like one step in, one step out. So until I decided, like, listen, it's either you go in 100% or you find something else to do. It can't be like 50-50.
Yeah.
So I just, at that point, I just felt like, okay, like I'm good at this. And I realized I was good at teaching more in university because I was really into like calisthenics, and I was gym training ever since I was 13, 14 years old. Yeah. I don't know if you recall back in the day when we were training, I was very athletic. I was in good shape. So I was really in the gym from that time. So in university, I used to help like a couple of students out, and I realized like, okay, I have the patience and I know how to teach particular things. And I kind of like, okay, why don't I give this a try? So I did my course. I did like level 2 and level 3 PT certification here. And then I just started, like, took some couple of PTs on the side. And after the first year, I just went full force. I mean, I invested into a couple more courses. I did some online stuff. Obviously, like the SNC part becomes a little bit more natural since you've played sports.
Of course.
You kind of like understand the movements a little bit better. You're able to relate to a lot of the athletes. And I did the strength and conditioning with the online Barcelona platform. That was like another university course, man, like 9 months long every month, like between projects and presentations and so on. So it was really heavy to deal with, but I think I gained a lot from that. And since I started working with athletes, I kind of realized, okay, this is more like the path that I find myself, not just like more comfortable, but I'm really able to produce in my own way. Okay. I mean, at the end of the day, you view any, I mean, obviously we've taken several like SNC courses since that time, but it's almost like you get the same information all the time. plus minus like 5% every now and then, but it really comes down to you, like what you think works for particular people, like how you're able to transfer like that knowledge plus your experience into work, and the programming is a big part of that. So
true. We've had a lot of discussion, actually, you and me. That's why we see a lot eye to eye. We have more or less the same system in mind, same philosophy. Yeah. Of course, each one of us has his own touch, but yeah, like what I liked about you is actually your thought process, which is something I usually tell lots of coaches, like there should always be a reason why you're doing what you're doing or why you're choosing a specific exercise.
100%.
Having an engineering background and an athletic background, do you think that gave you an edge in strength and conditioning?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure, for sure. Because and besides, not only that, I think in general, like during university, the thing that worked for me in engineering is that I was actually enjoying it. I was very good at like problem solving. And now reflecting back some of the days when I reflect back on basketball, I think like playing lots of puzzle games and numbers and so on really opens a lot your mind to discovering like patterns, and you kind of view the game a little bit different than others. And I think this is some of the stuff, for example, for a point guard position, you can't really teach.
Yeah.
Like if you're able to read the game at your own pace, see certain patterns, like certain players' movements and so on, I think this comes from different things that you do on the side, like whether like you're good with numbers or you're good at problem solving, I think that gives you a bit of an edge. So now, like, whenever you get, let's say, a client, I feel definitely like in terms of structure, being able to break down what the person, for example, like requires, also checking like how well he moves, having an engineering background, understanding like laws of physics and really understanding what concepts actually translate to performance. For example, if you want to improve, let's say, vertical jump, at the end of the day, it's like a power output. So understanding like, okay, it's force times acceleration, let's say. But like, okay, what can you improve here? If I improve the force, but then I need to also improve, let's say, acceleration at a certain point. So it's really diving into that. I think understanding the concepts properly really, really helps you in performing or doing your job in a much better way, I would say.
Sure, because you can actually separate the components you need to work on, and based on who you have, you can actually choose what you want to work on.
Yeah.
Now, speaking about point guards, you've actually trained an ex-teammate of mine in the national team. He is one of the best, if not the best, player in Asia.
Yeah.
Wael Araji. What separates Wael in terms of work ethic? I've known him a bit back then. You've trained him for a while before he goes back to his season. What do you think is something special about this guy when it comes to work ethic and gym work?
I mean, before like getting into that, I just want to say, like, actually, when we started I mean, you already know, like, we left, I think last time we were all together, we were in Mongolia, so we really left on a bad note.
That was, guys, we had a big fight. Yeah.
I mean, it was massive. And I think at that point, we really thought, yeah, for sure, we're never going to talk to these guys again, like, for sure. And I remember during COVID, I kind of reached out to him. I think during that time, the explosion happened also in Lebanon. So that was kind of like a bit, like kind of huge. And there wasn't really much going on in Lebanon. And I reached out to him saying, like, look, if you're going to be here for a while, I don't mind like working with you if you want that. And he was actually open for it. So he came and man, I remember we had like, I think a month and a half or two before he went to Qatar at that time. I think we both gave it like literally our best. I mean, we were in the gym for like an hour and a half on daily basis. The guy is just like, I mean, we all kind of had like that work ethic, but to see it at a later stage is for sure he's one of the best that I've worked with. Like very determined, doesn't say no to anything. I mean, you could literally break him in the session and he would still like carry on. And funny enough, like at the time when we worked the first time, he was in a very bad shape, like bad knees.
I remember.
A lot of problems and so on. And to progress from that, gaining back confidence, I mean, he knows, like he was struggling to jump even one step.
Especially because he plays a lot of minutes. Like there is a lot of load on.
The work rate for the guy is ridiculous. And, I mean, after that camp, he was still coming every couple of months during that time. He works out with me for like, let's say, 2-3 weeks. And I think we did a fairly good job because I think during those 2 years, his work rate was ridiculous. He was playing like a lot of minutes.
Yeah, man. He used to finish from Qatar, then travel, play with Riyadh, then go. It was
national team and so on. And thank God, like during that period, he was actually feeling great, like no injuries, no knee pain whatsoever. You can see him kind of getting a little bit back, his explosiveness, his jumping, he's a lot more confidence in contact. So I think I was really happy like and enjoying like watching him at that time. Yeah.
During the intro, I said you train athletes and non-athletes.
Yeah.
But your approach is usually, of course, depending on the goal, you have a more athletic and performance-based approach, more or less. Do you think this approach is something we lack in our region or in the UAE specifically?
Yes, I think what we lack in general is a little bit more knowledge and awareness, to be honest with you. I just feel like general population really have the wrong conception when it comes to training. They view it just in one dimensional, like without really understanding like the full scope.
When you say one dimensional, what do you mean?
It's just like the, I think the main concept of gym, people see it like, okay, Monday I train chest, Tuesday I train back, Wednesday I train legs, and the list goes on, right? So, and they think if you train something other than that, that you don't really get results. So it's like I said, it's a bit of a lack of awareness and lack of information. Plus there's a lot of misinformation also that is shared.
It's crazy.
On Instagram. I think now it's getting a little bit better, but like I said, it's also very excessive. For example, now you see like Hyrox is becoming a bit more popular.
Yeah,
but it's like people, it's either this or it's either that. There's nothing like in between. You get my point? So now everyone is a runner. But now everyone is a runner, but they're not doing any resistance training on the side as well. So it's like, man, you just ride the wave. What can I say?
Like now talking about Hyrox, I'm going to say even CrossFit, a term we both hate, I assume. Yeah. When we're talking extreme, like when we say strength and conditioning to people, they really don't understand, like, I think the concept as a whole.
They think of it as cardio.
Yeah.
And they think of it like, oh, it's certain exercises. I'm like, bro, it's not exercises. It's not, it's a like an approach. It's a method. Like it's a whole, how do I say it? Like if you think gym training or bodybuilding is training, this is, I would say, is not even a drop in an ocean of strength and conditioning. Like there's so much to cover in strength and conditioning that it's impossible to cover everything at once.
True.
Right?
I think it falls in the middle of the extreme, which is basically the CrossFit, Hyrox, and the pure resistance training. Basically, SNC is actually in the middle because in life, you need the proper athletic SNC training, even if you just want to have fun with your
friends. Yes, yeah. I think also you can add to that is just SNC covers a bit more injury prevention than the rest as well.
True.
And plyometrics, like, because none of the rest actually cover concepts like that. Like, if you think, for example, like, I mean, in CrossFit or HYROX, mainly you can see box jumps, for example, which is not really plyometrics. Maybe broad jumps nowadays, but again,
I actually shot today a reel regarding this. Like, it's crazy how there is a huge misconception when it comes to certain terminologies, and how it's just generalized. Like, box jump is actually not a plyometric exercise if it's done the way it's typically done.
It's like a power squat. Like, you can think of it like that. I mean, I don't know, but like I said, it's just certain words that become popular and people love to use it, even in the wrong context, but you always see it there. Yeah. I mean, you can talk about so many things in the industry that you see nowadays, like ice bath, sauna.
Ice bath after workouts.
Plyometrics, plyometrics and recovery. And I mean, I used to see some videos, some guys saying like, oh, guys, ice bath, you should really try it. I'm feeling the recovery so much. What are you even saying? Like, it's not something that you feel on the spot. It's just a concept. Plus, you need to know, like, when exactly to use it. So, yeah, like I said, it's just there's a lot of misinformation that's always shared, unfortunately. And I think, like, our job needs to be at least educate the people that are working with you. Definitely. Especially, obviously, they're going to go around. They interact with a lot of people. They come with sometimes like ridiculous ideas. So you kind of need to, instead of blocking them or shutting them down, is more educating them. Like,
sure.
I mean, I'll tell you about another thing. Also, for example, the Whoop. Nowadays, it's like you see everyone and most of the people are wearing it just because it's trendy. Oh, I look like I'm fit, I'm wearing.
But they don't understand the
value that it holds, or how you can you adapt, for example, like your training or your lifestyle to certain devices that you wear.
Use certain parameters that you actually have over there for your own benefit and see how you can manipulate some things in your lifestyle or training.
Exactly. Like, oh, red zone, but we push hard. Such a badass.
Yeah. So now, since you said red zone, people don't understand how, I'm not going to say people generalize, like most people think that I need to smash the session, I need to get out of the session barely being able to walk to get the benefits. But they don't understand how important like proper load management is. Yeah. Some days you need to work in your red zone. Some days you need to take it down a notch. How do you usually manipulate these variables with your clients? And basically, what's your training philosophy? Of course, that differs from client to client, but how's your usual approach?
Like you said, it differs from client to client, but let's take, for example, someone who works a 9-to-5 job, which is mainly the majority of our, let's say, inquiries. The main thing for me is, and I really stress on this point, is that, bro, you're not an athlete. You're an employee, and you're coming here to kind of like be effective and maintain your health and kind of like work on improving, let's say, your strength, maintain your muscle mass, improve 1-2-3 in case you have pain and so on. So you need to first understand that. So mainly the priority in your life, besides, like, let's say, your health, it's still your job.
Yeah.
And consider the fact that that takes the majority of your hours. You need to also be considerate in your training hours as well. So if your load is constantly high, that you go barely able to, for example, let's say walk, you're tired the whole time, you're not able to work properly, you're definitely overtraining.
True.
So break down, for example, let's say, how many times are you able to train per week? You don't need to train 7 days a week. You don't need to train 6 days a week. I mean, you can train, let's say also, like, what are you doing? For example, if you're doing resistance training, I always say, like, try to balance a bit of everything. Like, you need mobility, you need strength, and you need also aerobic. So let's say mobility, you don't need to specifically do particular days where you're only doing mobility, but you can allocate, for example, like a 10-minute block in the beginning of every workout. True. Just to kind of like knock that down.
Basically integrate stuff together.
Exactly. And then, for example, for aerobic stuff, I would usually suggest, for example, get, let's say, 12 to 20 minutes in total during the week of, let's say, zone 4 or 5 to improve your fitness level, let's say, or anaerobic conditioning. And then you can have, for example, like 2 days where you do kind of like a steady state activity, zone two, mainly to build your endurance, get into a fat burning zone. That helps with your body composition as well. And then resistance training, whether it's 3 or 4, it just depends on what are you able to commit to. And so that's kind of like my approach, is get a bit of everything. Also, the training style or the block really depends on the person as well. Some people like want to gain size. Some people want to gain strength. Some people want to, let's say they're playing paddle on the side. That's another thing also we have to consider.
Especially
like,
here, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of them play paddle and then, okay, you need to do 1, 2, 3. No, but I want to, for example, like work on my chest. I want to work. It's like, bro, you can't have everything at once. Yeah, you're playing 3-4 times a week paddle. Like, that's very high in terms of volume per week. And you have to understand, like, the game, yes, it feels easy because it's easy to learn. Also,
there is stress being done on the joints.
That's what I mean. Like, it's very reactive. I mean, it's exactly like basketball. Yeah. It's very, you have to be very shifty. And then, you have to have, let's say, it's a very reactive sport, so your Achilles tendon are very loaded. You get multiple, like, calf strains. So, it's so common to get, like, calf strains and the
calf Achilles, strains, shoulder pain, lower back pain.
Exactly, and elbows. And so, like, you have to be aware of that. Like, so if you want to play, for example, paddle consistently, your training has to be accustomed to that. If you want to play it occasionally once a week, that's completely fine. Then you can train, like, other stuff. But people need to understand, like, you're not an athlete. Sorry to say that. Like, you're an employee. So you have to be aware of that as well.
Would you incorporate a bit of plyometrics, a bit of upper body plyometric work to the general population clients?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's a good way. I mean, look, even, for example, you get certain people, let's say, it takes them a bit of time to build strength, let's say.
Sure.
So let's say you're stuck at a particular point. I also like to kind of change phases every now and then. So if I do like kind of like a contrast training where you're
can
doing...
Can you explain what's contrast training for people who don't...
Yeah, so it's basically, for example, mixing a resistance training exercise, which is focused on strength, followed by more of a similar like pattern, but is more incorporate of power.
More,
so
yeah.
You're doing almost the same kind of movement in terms of pattern, but with a higher speed, let's say. So I'll give you an example. If you're doing like a chest press followed by plyo push-ups or like a ball throw, so something like that. It's a good way to break certain plateaus, let's say. Plus, with plyometrics, you're able to incorporate like type 2 muscle fibers, which can also help with building like your power and absolute strength. So yeah, I do. I mean, squat jumps is a great way to improve... squats in general is I would say a complex movement that not everyone moves so comfortably with it.
True.
And this is like another thing. You see some people immediately like to load up with a bar, which I don't understand.
You're out of my mind now, yeah.
Yeah, I mean like the guy or the girl clearly is unable to move with the bar. And look, I understand it. The first time you go under the bar, it's very intimidating. You feel like, shit, what is this that I'm carrying? It's on my back. So all of a sudden you're thinking, oh, I'm going to break my back. Or this, or that. So in general, you're not so comfortable yet. So I would say like squats is one of those things where try to build confidence first. Make sure to program the movement properly. You can, man, it's a squat pattern. You know how many exercises you can do that mimics the same movement?
Much less effort.
Yeah.
It won't be as intimidating using a goblet squat, a press-up
exactly,
squat.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
There's a million ways you can do it just to develop the pattern, like you said.
So I do usually like heels elevated goblet squat or a seated squat, for example, on the bench. Some people don't like it because there's a compressive like element to the back in that sense. If you do it like safely or not with a lot of heavy weight, I mean, it works fine. But yeah, like start with these, add a jumping squat here and there. Naturally, you build the strength, they become more comfortable, then move them into like, let's say, heavier weights. And also like, how much do you actually need to work on strength with certain people? I mean, there comes a limit where you feel like, okay, I mean, this guy is definitely not competing in anything. So I can, for example, draw the line here, maybe switch up the training to something else. So I usually transfer from bilateral movements, if like a normal squat, to kind of focus more on single leg movements in that point, even single leg squat or staggered position squat, just to switch it up a little bit. Because there's still a lot of room to grow without having to go, for example, 1.6 or 1.8 times their body weight, let's say.
Now that you said this, like, we see it commonly where trainers, I'm not going to say a lot of SNC coaches, PTs or SNC coaches in general, tend to put their clients for 1RMs.
Yeah.
I do understand some people like to challenge themselves with the number, but if you're an athlete or a non-athlete, and you're not a power lifter, like your goal is not to get that 1RM. Do you think it's beneficial to even reach the 1RM? Like, for me personally, I like the 3RM, 4RM to have that range to work with. What do you think?
Look, with athletes, I don't mind it. Depends on the athlete as well. For example, like for basketball players or any like, even for boxers. I mean, I use it a lot with boxers as well. With athletes, it can kind of, if you're stuck at a particular, let's say the 3RM or 5RM, sometimes if you want to break that point just to add, let's say, a bit extra, let's say, strength, even just, how do I say this? If you load up the bar and just kind of like stand, let's say, pick it up.
Get
and
the
just,
feel of it.
Exactly, just get the feel of it. Naturally, it's going to stimulate your body to move maybe better in lower weights. So it's not necessarily that you have to work your 1RM. Plus, it's hard to determine. Like sometimes it might take, I mean, forever to really. Okay, let's say you squat 180. What makes you think you can't squat, for example, 182.5? So like you have to rest and then load the bar again and then go for another turn. And then maybe you clear it, maybe you're not. So I'm just saying it's not always so effective.
Risk reward.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So also like being time efficient. Like sometimes you have guys, you have to work with them within the hour. And warming up for like a 1RM squat takes a long time, to be honest. Then you have to rest them and so on. So it's just, like you said, being time efficient, it's not always the best thing to do. If you're able to do it, great. If not, I mean, it's not, you can always find so many ways to train for 1RM without actually training for 1RM.
True. At the end of the day, you want to develop strength, you need to lift heavy weights. Like whether it's 1RM, 2RM, 3RM, you just need to lift heavy.
Yeah, the thing, I think people, why they don't understand the concept of loading up or progressively overload in terms of weight is that you need the stimulus on the body. The body needs to feel the weight to actually get stronger. I mean, and if you don't, if for example, some people don't actually feel comfortable in doing that, let's say an overcoming isometrics is a great way to develop that kind of strength without actually loading anything.
True.
Right?
Guys, basically overcoming isos is when you're pushing something against an immovable object. Yeah. You're exerting maximum force, but there is no load actually.
And this is inertia. Like, so this is where like the physics come in handy. You get my point? It's like if you're pressing against something that's not going to move, the more force you apply, the same amount of force is going to resist you back. So it's a good way to kind of like develop your strength in that sense, and it's very safe.
Yeah. Like the science is the science. There is a lot that we can play with as long as we're understanding what we're doing.
Yeah.
It's completely fine. We're diving deep into subject because this is actually the nice thing about the strength and conditioning and athletic training. So, you're a guy who invests a lot in his education. Like, I've seen it firsthand, and we took a couple of courses together. Yeah. How important do you think is that aspect? Because, you know, a lot of coaches had or took an SNC course, and they're like, khalas, I'm fine with that. And they label themselves as SNC coaches. But the science is progressing.
Yeah.
Like, we cannot stop. And was there any specific influence, a certain person or a mentor that basically guided you along the way?
I wouldn't say like there was a mentor, but I really interact with a lot of, let's say, SNC coaches, and I'm not shy to ever like ask questions and so on. I mean, I'm open-minded about these things all the time, and I think it's a good way to grasp almost from everyone. I'll give you an example. Like we talked earlier, the science is almost the same. I mean, no one is applying something that you haven't taken before or a different kind of approach. I mean, the approach has always been there. But let's say the first couple of times I was training boxers, obviously the sport is a bit weird for you because we play kind of like a team sport, whether it's basketball or football, the sport is very different.
True.
I wasn't really sure what is it exactly that I need to work on. Like, okay, I understand the nature of the sport. I understand that I need to improve 1, 2, 3. But is what I'm doing adding value, or is it different than what they do, for example, in the boxing training, or is it not?
And can you elaborate on that?
So, for example, let's say in the beginning, I used to do a lot of like interval work, similar to like, let's say, a boxing round. Yeah. So I do like a 3-minute continuous work. It could be like weighted jabs or shadow boxing with bands, followed by a bit of plyometric work to improve like footwork, improve explosiveness, first step, and so on. More throws, for example, like ball throws or slam balls or anything like that. A lot of jerk presses, lateral movement. But then again, I wasn't really sure if that was
the right approach
or not. So when I did a workshop with Boxing Science and Wilson, like the main guy there, you were supposed to be there.
I booked and I forgot. Yeah.
But I mean, honestly speaking, bro, in terms of science, I did not get anything new that you didn't know. But to be honest, this like 5% and understanding like just a structure or what is it that I need to work on is just I would pay for it at any time. You get my point? It's not really, so that's why I'm saying it is important, even if you're going over the same material over and over again. But you're getting firsthand experience from people in that particular sport, and it really helps you understand what you need to work on. And for example, like if you check heart rate response when I was doing, for example, like intervals, they're probably doing the same thing as doing pad work. So in terms of conditioning, I'm not really adding any value.
Yeah, because they're already doing
exactly
that work.
Yeah. In terms of, let's say, absolute power or power development, and I didn't know that, but in general, like for example, we work a lot with football players or basketball players on developing absolute power or absolute strength. And the guy told me that there's a lot of studies that show if you improve vertical jump for boxers, it actually improves their knockout power. So because it at the end of the day, it's a kind of an expression of a power output.
Power output, definitely.
So I changed my approach completely. And honestly, it was way more effective. And I also see like the results one of the guys that I was working with, the Badr, just camp in, camp out, the improvements were ridiculous. Like conditioning-wise, strength-wise, power-wise. So, and anytime I had kind of like a question or I was in doubt about something, I used to reach out to Wilson anytime. I'm still in touch with him. I ask him, for example, about particular things and he always answers. So I really appreciate that. And in general, I always told you, like, in this industry, especially people that are working SNC, like, properly, they're always going to be, like, they're going to open their hands and they're going to try to help you as much as possible, especially if you're seeking, for example, particular like information or you would like to get an exposure on their experience and so on. They're always open to share that. You get my point? And I appreciate that a lot. And I do the same when people reach out to me.
No, and I do believe this is how we actually empower each other. Like, yeah, the science is there. People have done it before us. We're still young. We're developing. Like, our goal is to develop a successful career, so why not follow the people who actually
also sometimes like we lack a bit how do I say this, like the medium that we're in also doesn't allow us to really kind of experiment or really add a lot of our touch and experience into the field that we're in. I mean, some of the guys, obviously, like if you're in the States, basketball is huge there. Where
you're exposed to much more. The facilities are
yeah, yeah, exactly. Amazing. So this plays a part as well. Like if you're in the UK, boxing scene is tremendous there. Football scene is ridiculous as well there. So if you compare it to here, it's just, you cannot, right?
No, I definitely agree. But if you look at it, let's say 5 to 10 years ago, like I always tell our young athletes or my young athletes, like you guys are lucky that you have this opportunity to be able to work on yourselves physically the right way. We didn't have that opportunity back then. It's not like we're extremely old.
Bro, like you said, I was athletic back in the day, but I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
But I used to, I remember every time we're in Lebanon, I used to go to Nike. I buy ankle weights. When my dad used to carry the bag, he tells me, what the hell are you buying? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know, but it's just ankle weights. So I'm thinking like, okay, if I play basketball with these, it's heavier to play with. So when I remove that, I'm going to be faster. I'll feel. Like, it's just common sense, right?
I think the ankle weights, all of us have
tried for sure. And I did, like, let's say, jump rope at that time. I used to do, like, squat jumps without even knowing that they're squat jumps. Just frog jumps, step-up jumps on the chair in my room. Just ridiculous stuff. And constantly trying to dunk, like, in the training. And this comes back to important. Yeah, intent. And I say this all the time, like, in any exercise, especially when it comes to SNC. If you're looking to improve, for example, your acceleration or first step, when you're doing the exercise, you actually have to put in that effort, like you're trying to explode from point A to point B as fast as you can. If you're not, it's useless.
You won't get the benefit that you need. Man, wow. You're reading my mind in everything that you're saying. Like you said, in, let's say, the States, UK, they have the facilities. They have the education. They have the schools, the colleges. Do you think in our region things are improving? I know we're pretty far compared to what they have over there. And that's why, when you know me, I always try to bring people in so that we can actually get the benefits and educate ourselves to be like the leading SNC coaches in our region. Do you think things are getting better?
I think to a certain extent, but the thing is, for me, I believe that it's more of a culture thing. Like, the reason why those fields are successful there, because sports is a huge part of the culture and economy. Like, if you think, for example, of football in the UK, it's something embedded in the society. The viewerships are insane. So people have a lot of interest in it. And being a football player is actually like a dream job there. If you think, for example, like in our region, everyone always, for example, like they tend to say, oh, you should become an engineer, you should become a doctor. You're never...
I mean, that's why you and me went for engineering.
Yes, but like you get my point. It's like it's very uncommon for you to play basketball for a career. You get my point? It's not like you were going to make a ridiculous amount of money or something like that. So I think that's a very important aspect to consider. Like, as long as the sports stay as it is here, it's hard for that field to progress. Because at the end of the day, to see people develop more interest, because it comes down also to the ability to pay money, right?
Yeah.
So, for example, when teams and academies are investing heavily into a sport that pays them back as well financially, this is, I think, where they're going to invest a bit more to bring people with that kind of experience to develop more players. Plus, you need to see more players making it here into the big leagues.
Yeah.
I think this is what's going to make a big difference. As long as they're just playing here, like local leagues and so on, I don't think the sport is going to develop more than that, but it's definitely getting there. There's more exposure. I think it's on the right track, but let's see where it goes.
Now that you said like team sports and the people basically paying or investing, I don't know if you noticed that, but most of the efforts when it comes to strength and conditioning are individual efforts. Like athletes wanting to develop. But when it comes to teams, SNC is actually underrated and undervalued, like when it comes to the pay, when it comes to the emphasis on that. I don't know. In Syria, I actually don't know, but in Lebanon,
we don't have it, but it's not there.
Yeah, like, and this is why we're so far off the people that are actually, let's say, towards the West. I do think we're on the right track. It's going to take some time, like you said. Yeah. It's a culture. But
it needs also to start young. Because if you compare, for example, for me, I think the most physically, let's say, developed athletes that you will find, and this shows all the time, is kids that are coming from the US. Bro, it's crazy. On another planet. No. Like, you watch them play. Bro, I mean, we're talking about, we bring retired athletes to play in our leagues, and they still dominate the league. Like it's not even... It's a joke, right?
Yeah.
But if you look at them when they play, it's so comfortable. They're much faster. They jump much higher. They're physically so strong. Even the ones that look out of shape, they're still like much faster than any other player that you see on the field. And also, if you check in Lebanon, the players that are playing well right now, they all are coming from the US. Like, they did their college in the US and then they're coming back to Lebanon. So I think starting young adds a huge value in terms of setting adaptations for kids, honestly. I don't think you're gonna become all of this ridiculous bouncy freak in the middle of your 20s. It needs to happen when you are like 14, 15.
Now you're talking about young athletes. We still have it in our region and in our culture that no, weightlifting is bad for kids.
Yeah.
It will harm them from growing or whatever. Definitely some parents are a bit more educated than others, so they understand the importance of SNC. But still, until now, I have parents asking me, won't that hurt my kid?
Yeah. I think, like you said, it's a lot of myth and kind of like misinformation. But there's a lot of research and studies that actually show like lifting weights, even at a younger age, actually helps with building your bone density and getting you stronger, sets a lot of adaptation. Obviously, it needs to be guided. I'm not saying that. Yeah, exactly. Like it needs to be guided.
You see some crazy stuff in the
gym. Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, look, I think definitely we have to consider that there is a lot of compressive forces with certain lifts. But everything you do needs to be well guided. It doesn't mean that the kid can lift. You just have to know exactly what you're doing with the kid. What's the right volume? Even when you're doing, I mean, you see, even guys that I see sometimes training kids, man, the plyometric volume is just ridiculous.
Or they automatically start doing crazy stuff and the kid.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And it's like, bro, do you know this guy is still so young? You're frying his central nervous system, like frying it.
Yeah, and we see knee pain at 13, 14 years old, like regardless of the growth. But this shouldn't
be the case. I agree. But yeah, like going back to your point, man, I think in terms of like we're talking about like the parents and the fear. I believe. First of all, like, look how much sports in general, like the whatever sport you play as a child, how much influence it actually has on your adaptation and your body. Like swimmers, and I always say this, bro, look at swimmers. If they're swimming from a particular age until, for example, they all look the same, bro. Broad shoulders, like very long torso, the chest strength is just ridiculous. Basketball players, for example, same, like. Very bouncy, very light on the feet, broad shoulders, good in for example, like vertical pushing movements. If you look at, for example, kids that play rugby or American football, man, it's just the strength level is just insane. But that also comes a lot from contact and isometric strength. Like people don't realize that in the training, there's a lot of isometric contact that happens. And I think that helps a lot with developing your strength. I used to think like, during the time when we were in university, we used to get some, let's say, students from abroad that are doing like a semester over from the US. And I mean, you're a basketball player at that time, we're in the gym. I can hardly press, bro, bench press like 90 kilos, 95 kilos. And the kid, 2 years like younger than me, probably weighs the same. Run 110, 120, just bouncing the thing off the chest so easily.
But they're exposed that from school.
Yes.
And this is what we don't have. Like, we're still talking about PE, physical education, doing random sports. Don't get me wrong, sports is very good for your kids, but that culture, that educational aspect when it comes to resistance training and training kids in the gym needs to be much better.
Also, the environment is different, to be honest. Sure. Like today, for example, if we go to any school, you're not going to see like a room that all the kids are hungry to play. They're hungry for competition. They want to beat each other up. Not beat each other up in terms of like physically, but I'm talking in the sport itself. It's very like passive. You get my point? And over there, man, like you're probably going to think twice before you even call a foul. Like it's just very aggressive, very different. And you know, when I started realizing that, every time we're away for a national team camp, when you go back to your club, you just feel like you're on another level than the rest. It's just, I think the level of competition, especially when you're in contact with players of the same kind of like caliber and the same intensity, it just, the room of improvement is very, very big. And I think that's what they have there. But the main goal is, I go back to the point of culture, is that there is a target that you're able to be, for example, a player in the NBA or in the NFL. So the dream is actually, or the target is huge over there. And you need to think here, for example, if we're matching that same kind of caliber, and I don't think we're not.
It's, yeah, it's like very the 1% among some athletes that might do it or might not, but it's actually very rare, like you said. No, I definitely agree. Speaking previously, let's say, about knee pain, knee injuries, stuff like that, did that play a role in you becoming an SNC coach? And how important it is to change your approach when dealing with certain injuries? Because, you know, like the common thing is for trainers to push their athletes, not understand what's actually happening. So how do you usually approach that?
I think first educating like the athletes or the people on different kinds of pain is important, because people just think if they, the moment they feel anything, it's immediately like pain. And I'm just saying, okay, like, is it like a pain that's kind of like, is it stinging you, or is it like you feel it's a joint pain, or is it just a burn? Because there is, each is different.
Yeah.
And then there is a certain level of pain that is, let's say, below 4 or 3, which is kind of like tolerable. It could be anything. Or there's a certain type of pain that you feel, I'm not loading on this leg at all, for example. I'm completely shifting towards the right side. So I think you just need to kind of like be smart in the approach. There are certain moments where you can push, and there are certain moments where you need to be smart. Definitely it helped a lot, because dealing with certain injuries on your own, I think, helps you a lot in your approach with the, plus the ability to relate.
To understand.
Yeah, because the fear element is huge. Man, when you get an injury, people don't understand. There's a lot of mental blocks that comes with it. You're afraid to try anything after. Like if you're coming off of an ACL, it's not so easy to tell a guy jump on one leg.
True.
So you have to kind of like, if you're able to relate and you understand, you have to build building blocks to kind of like just break that mental barrier. And the moment they get one rep, it just it's automatically done.
I can actually relate, because I have a client who is now 6 months post ACL. Every time I used to ask her to jump, I'm going to jump. Or yes. Anytime I tell her to push the pace, I can push. Like for you as an SNC coach, you understand the movements. You understand how much you can push the client.
Yeah.
Then, like you said, it's a mental barrier. But if you know how to manipulate that and give them the confidence, they can actually start
exactly
doing what we need them to
do. You need to trick the body. The body is definitely very smart. Yeah, I remember when I tore my hamstring, immediately, like your mind blocks. Man, I couldn't even hinge, like just for this point. And then like you kind of force it a little bit and you realize, okay, like actually in some of the movements I'm okay, but your mind blocks it completely. It's just, it's more like a protective mechanism to kind of like not, let's say, damage the area further or so on. But at a certain point when you're training, is just knowing how to manipulate certain things, getting length in certain muscles without actually being under load or stress. And it's just a way to kind of like let your mind and body go of certain things. Yeah.
True. And for me, usually my approach when someone has pain is, let's find the movements that don't cause pain.
Yeah.
Let's progressively overload those. Okay, you're fine. Let's see if we can get that bit of an extra, and then you take it from there. You've been in Dubai for a long time now.
Like 13, 14 years now, almost, yeah.
So what has been the most challenging aspect for you to be able to advance in your career as an SNC coach? Like, Dubai is a very competitive market. Regardless, you have some great coaches, you have some bad coaches, but Dubai is competitive in all industries.
Yeah.
So what do you think was the biggest challenge for you to start? And what are the challenges you're facing now?
Look, to be honest, I think in the beginning, it wasn't really tough for me to kind of like land clients. It was more because during the time when I started, let's say, PT, it wasn't that trendy at the moment. Right. I mean, it was a lot of my friends found it weird that what the hell are you doing? So I would say like the market was still, there was a lot of PTs. But you can kind of feel like you're bringing something completely different, like your package or your knowledge or your expertise, and your approach is a little bit different. Because that time it was bodybuilding heavy, like nothing else. It was either bodybuilding or CrossFit.
Yeah.
So definitely like the approach was a little bit different. And what helped me, I think, was I was already in Dubai for quite several years, like maybe 6-7 years in Dubai. So I already had, and I was in university, so I kind of like had a bit of a a database here. So when I decided to do it, it wasn't completely like from scratch where I'm flying from a different country, and I think that's much harder. So I wouldn't say I struggled to land a couple of clients in the beginning. That wasn't really challenging for me. The challenge was, is like I told you, you're making a career shift, and I was still not sure what I wanted to do in that part of my life. For me, like, I'm someone ambitious, and I wanted to be like, or feel that whatever I'm gonna decide to do, I need to do it like 100%. Like, خلاص, I cannot be like one foot in, one foot out, or doing this temporary. So I think after the first 6 months, I would say I decided to just go full force. I always say like the market is competitive, it's very saturated, but if you're good at what you do, you're never gonna struggle. Like, you have to be smart, and there's a quote that I love. It's sometimes very, let's say, not understood quite well. And you hear it in some of the old songs, and it's the survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that the fittest in terms of the stronger physically, that they will survive. It's more like, are you able to fit in any society that you're thrown in? So I think adaptability is so important. In today's market, like, you have to be very good at advertising, you have to be very good at marketing, that especially in terms of digital advertisement. It's something that I really hate and I don't enjoy, but when it comes time to it, I try as much to put an effort, because it does help. I mean, I get most of my clients from Instagram and word of mouth.
It's actually, now I've had the same discussion today morning. Education is one part of the spectrum. Now we live in a social media age. People need to see what you do, like developing your business, developing your brand, marketing yourself, knowing how to sell. Not sell as in call people to sell, but basically let your work do the selling for you. These are components that PTs need to take into consideration when they're developing their own businesses.
Yeah, it's just, this is the thing that I would say I struggle most with. I'm not a person that likes social media a lot, so that's the part that kind of I feel it's really like a drag for me to do. I mean, sometimes even just the idea of setting a tripod for myself annoys me, like it really does. So yeah, but you have to do it. Like, I said, like if you want to like thrive and you want to, let's say, survive in the industry, you have to do that. Like, it's so easy to get into a comfortable spot. And sometimes I do, especially when you're busy with work. And like I said, sometimes you have certain people that get referred a lot, even without advertisement.
Oh,
and you might feel that they don't have a very strong presence online, and they still do a lot of work. So that works for me most of the time. But then every time you post, you still get like a lot of inquiries, you get good traction, but you have to be very consistent with it. And this is the part that I feel like I could be better at. But yeah, that's the only thing that I would say like I kind of like struggle with. But if you simplify things also in your mind, it depends on how ambitious you are as well. So put a number in mind how much you want to make, for example, per month. And you need to think, okay, how many clients are you going to cover per month? Okay, are you going to cover 30? If you're doing one-on-one, I'm not talking groups, are you going to cover 30? The number seems a bit out of reach. So it's either you're moving more towards semi-private or groups, or if you're doing like individuals, you need to land tops, I would say, 20 clients if you're working one-on-one. So think of how much population there is in the UAE. You think it's hard for you to land 20, like 20 people? So if you simplify things in your head, they become more achievable. And this is where I feel like you need to believe that you're able to do something to actually do it. Then also, obviously, you need to action it. It's not just sitting like all of these people that talk about manifesting and I don't know what. And I meditate
and
in the morning.
And they don't take action. Yeah,
yeah. And I'm imagining the cash falling from the sky on my head. Like this stuff, man. Yes, great. But
manifestation, Like, you know, for me, it's all about steps that we need to take to be able to achieve what we want to achieve. Let's say landing X amount of clients, that's a start.
Yeah.
For you, let's say to have 20 clients, that's your initial goal. But there has to be much bigger goals if you're an ambitious person. So what's next for you? Like, obviously, when you're giving your session, your client, you have a good solid base, you have that. What's next for you?
To be honest, this is an area now that I'm trying to figure out. Like, I'm honestly, this is the part that I've been thinking about of this past year. Like, what do I want to do next? And I feel I want to work more with groups, like small groups, I would say, and try to have an impact on what we were discussing earlier. I feel that a lot of the academies or young athletes are still missing a lot that we can kind of like improve for them, because at the end of the day, the skills are there. And what's lacking, you can tell, man, that just the physical aspect is nowhere near. True. Nowhere near. And the first time I remember, I played in Asia, not during the time that we played. I played in under 16. I was 14 years old at that time. And I think that opened my mind a lot to why I wanted to actually hit the gym and become more athletic, because, bro, I got slapped with a reality check like no other. And you're talking, this is Asian level.
And 2 years at that level, there's
yes,
a huge
difference. Yeah. And bro, you're talking, I barely hit puberty at that age. But that's not my point. My point was, you're talking still at an Asia level.
Yeah.
Imagine the European and the American level. So at that point, I was like, man, physically, we're not even close to these guys. Like, conditioning wise, these guys can rub up and down the floor. Like, they still have the same effort on their shot, just the ability to bounce, very physical, very so on. And I felt that was the moment where I felt, okay, like, I really need to hit the gym. I need to get better at 1, 2, 3. I need to do this. I need to do that. So if you think and compare now, also kids nowadays, there is a good initiative. A lot of them, maybe not necessarily doing the 100% correct things, but still, you can see there's more interest in understanding the importance of this. And I just feel I want to be able to have a proper impact on developing SNC, for example, like in our region, especially for young athletes that eventually might actually kind of
hopefully
like
open, achieve what they want.
Exactly, achieve. Yeah.
So talking about that, you know, we have like now both of us are 31. So you said like a lot of our goal is to have lots of young athletes hopefully make it to the international scene. Do you have any advice for up-and-coming coaches? Because now the industry is becoming much more competitive, especially here in Dubai. We have people coming from literally all over the world. What do you think is an advice or a must that young coaches need to take into consideration?
You're talking about the fitness industry, yes. Yeah? I think first and foremost, you need to really understand and have a why are you doing this particular job. Like, if you ask me now what's next for me, my answer was very clear. Like, I want to have an impact on this particular field. So when I define myself, I don't define myself as an athlete. I'm a coach, and I'm trying to educate people, and I'm trying to help people to perform better. And this is not just an Instagram bio, because now you see it everywhere. But really, if you're going to be better at this job, you need to really consider it as a career. So a lot of people, and this you see a lot, unfortunately, a lot of the coaches still put themselves as a priority.
Oof, yeah.
I mean, bro, to be honest, like nowadays, I train at, you also. I mean, I train at most of the days 5 a.m. just to catch an hour and a half, like before starting at 7.
And you ditch me on Saturdays twice.
Yeah,
now.
Sometimes, yeah. But like, my point is that if you're training 4 or 5 hours a day, I'm not saying like, you know, if you're free, you're struggling, but I'm just saying like, if you have that much time, it cannot be spent just training and shopping and eating and I don't know what. It's just try to invest a little bit more in yourself. See what you can improve to actually land more clients. And it's easier said than done. But I'm just saying like, you need to really treat this as a career. And a lot of coaches don't.
I definitely agree. And you said it, like, you need to know your why. It's not just in our industry, in any industry, you need to understand why you're doing what we're doing. Like you said it, you want to educate youngsters. Your goal is to help them achieve what they can't maybe achieve without your help or whatever it is. Personally, my job is to educate as much coaches as I can for them to develop the right thought process when training clients. Like, We want to have the right impact on people. But I do believe we're doing it for the right reason. You should always do it for the right reason. when yeah. you think of my goal, I want to make X amount, or I want to do this or that, like the wrong reasons won't get you there.
And I truly believe that, because there was a year I remember, and I spoke to my wife about this, and I told her I was so concerned and chasing like kind of like financial success during that year that I kind of lost the reason why I was doing this job. And I really felt that I'm going every single day just passing on the sessions to, for example, get
that amount
end of the month and so on. And at a certain point, yes, you might get that amount, but then you feel a void that I'm not really happy with what I'm doing. You get my point? And it's normal. Like it's normal to experience this kind of stuff. It's a good kind of way to understand. Sometimes you drift away from what you're doing. So you kind of like adjust to that as well. So started investing a little bit more, taking new courses to kind of like switch your style a little bit, refresh your mind. And you notice like you go to the session in a much different energy than usual. So you're never going to be, and I always say this, a lot of people always say, oh, but you know, I'm searching for the motivation to start this. I'm searching for the motivation to do this. I have no motivation at the moment. I'm like, bro, motivation is a feeling. Like you could wake up, watch something, and you feel, for example, you watch a basketball game and I feel motivated to go and play the next day, yeah. let's say, right? But being disciplined is a whole different ballgame. It's not about always feeling motivated, because you're never fully motivated. Same thing with being happy, for example. You're never walking every session like you're over the moon. Oh my God, I'm so happy I'm doing this job. It's not, but it's called being disciplined. It's yeah. called being professional. It's understanding, for example, like this is life. It's always like ups and downs. You get my point? And not every session is going to be great. Sometimes you're dealing with stuff in the back of your mind. But you still have to show up. You still have to absorb the client's energy. You still have to motivate them. You still have to give them the energy that they're looking for. You still have to educate them. So this is, I think, is the important thing about you being successful in this job. Because people can really absorb how passionate or how serious about you're about this job. That's why, man, I never, honestly, thank God, but it's also, I credit myself and you as well. I'm never afraid to lose a client, and I'm always comfortable because I know I'm doing my job. That's why your retainability is high,
sure.
right? It's not about landing one client and then losing him in a month or two. And some clients have this tendency, oh no, like, I don't want to leave my coach. Yeah, but bro, you're paying money. So it's like you're paying money and not getting the service that you deserve, right? So this is what I mean. Like you do your job, your retainability is going to be high. Those people are going to attract other people. And like you said, people now are becoming more aware.
Yeah.
So whatever you're sharing, the type of work that you're doing is visible, and people are appreciating it more and more.
When you said like at some point in your career, your goal was more financially oriented, I think now you're like me, like whenever we get these small messages, like when people literally appreciate the work that you put in for their yeah. own benefit, like a 2-sentence message or 3-sentence makes my day.
Of course, of course, 1000%. Bro, you have a direct impact on someone's life. Like that's huge. No other job is going to give you that. Like, obviously, there's a lot of jobs that give you that, like being a doctor or a dentist or whatever. But I'm saying, like, this kind of job has a direct impact on people's life.
Agreed.
On their health, whether they feel certain type of pain, even when it comes to performance. Man, you go watch your athlete perform and you see the level that he's at and you can sense how grateful he is to you. This is irreplaceable, to be honest with you. I mean, that's why also for me, when you ask me like what's next for me, I want to work more with groups, because I just feel the energy when you're surrounded by a group is so different than when you're working one-on-one. And I've experienced that before when I was doing like group classes, and I want to kind of like get back into the semi small groups kind of training.
Would you want to open your own facility?
Yeah,
at some
for
point?
Sure. Yeah, 1000%.
I didn't even finish the sentence.
Yeah, for sure. Because I'm already thinking about it, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, if you want to work the way you want and you want to have an impact, you need the right space also to kind of deliver like your service.
To actually have also your own community, people yeah. who actually believe in yeah. what you're offering them.
It doesn't have to be like on my own, but even with people with a similar, that share a similar mindset or a similar approach, for sure, it's not about being like a one-man show, but I'm saying you need to have the right space that you, that's going to allow you to deliver, for example, the service the way you want it.
My guy, it was actually a pleasure.
Allah, same here.
Like I said, we think, like, we have a lot of similarities in our thought processes. We see things in a similar fashion. This is why I actually wanted to have you here. Best of luck in everything that you do.
Yeah, thank you.
It was a pleasure having you, and this won't be the last time you come
here. Yeah, for sure.
Like, my guy.